wants.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smokey every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical dishes in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The back of the club, sipping my wet is where you find me. The back of the club, macking whore, my crew's behind me. Mad question asking, belly passing, music blasting. But I just can't quit because one of these honeys Biggie got to creep with, sleep with, keep the ep a secret. Why not? Why blow up my spot? Cause we both got hot. Now check it, I got more Mac than Craig. And in the bed, believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the needy. No need to be greedy. I got mad friends with Benzes, see notes by the layers, true to life players. Jump in the Rover and come over, tell your friends, jump in the GF3. I got the gun out by the tree.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
To the honeys getting money, playing fellas like dummies. You got a gun up in your waist, please don't shoot up the place.
Why?
Cause I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby, baby. Straight up, honey, really, I'm asking. Most of these fellas think they be macking, but they be acting. Who they attracting with that line? What's your name? What's your sign? Soon as he buy that wine, I just creep up from behind and ask you what your interests are. Who you be with? Things to make you smile. What numbers to dial? You gonna be here for a while? I'm gonna call my crew. You gonna call your crew. We can rendezvous at the bar around 2. Plans to leave, throw the keys to little C's. Pull the truck up front and roll up the next one so we can steam on the way to the telly. Go fill my belly. A T-bone steak, cheese, eggs, and Welch's grape. Conversate for a few, cause in a few we gon' do what we came to do. Ain't that right, boo?
True.
Forget the telly, we just go to the crib and watch a movie in the jacuzzi. Smoke L's while you do me.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player. To the honeys getting money, playing fellas like dummies.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
You got a gun up in your waist, please don't shoot up the place.
Wow.
Cause I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby, baby.
How you living, Biggie Smalls?
In mansion and Benz is giving ends to my friends and it feels stupendous. Tremendous cream, get a dollar and a dream. Still tote gas strapped with infrared beams.
What?
Chopping O's, smoking line optimals. Money, floors, and clothes, all a brother knows. A foolish pleasure, whatever. I had to find the buried treasure. So grams I had to measure. However, living better now, coochie sweater now. Drop top BMs, I'm the man, girlfriend.
Honey, check it. Tell your friends to get with my friends. We could be friends. Shit, we could do this every weekend.
That's right.
Alright? Is that alright with you? Yeah. Keep banging.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
To the honeys getting money, playing fellas like dummies. You got the gun up in your waist, please don't shoot up the place. Cause I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby, baby.
Good morning. You're here with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And for the next hour, I'll be taking you off the beaten path. We do this every Thursday. We broadcast from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory here from UBC's campus every Thursday, 7 to 8. So welcome. If this is your first time tuning in, to Off the Beaten Path. What we like to do here is talk a little bit about some current events. We talk about some local news here in the Lower Mainland. We talk about some Canadian national news. We also talk about news from down south. Some funny news in general. And occasionally we get into some serious stuff. I say occasionally, but it's pretty much like once a week. We get into some serious things. And this episode is pretty serious. We're going to be talking about the end of the world as we know it. And I don't really think that we're being dramatic. And maybe not the end of the world, but the end of some people's worlds, because it feels like we're on the cusp of some big changes. We might as well just jump right into it. You know, we like to start off here with the weather. And if you listen every week, you know that we are mid-January. We are winter in Vancouver. And so what that means is the forecast is heavy with rain. I think last week it said 14 straight days of rain. And this week, we only have 1 week straight of rain. So, you know, if you're doing the math, that makes sense. It will be raining today all the way through next Tuesday with a high of 8, pretty much around 8 the whole time. And then Wednesday through next Thursday, there is only one day where the rain is where the precipitation is over 40%. So what that means is it could potentially be nice outside. However, while it's raining with the high of 8 now, it will be not raining with the low of 1. And so I'm not really sure what I would prefer, a high of 8 in rain or a low of 1 and no rain. You know, those are just like the type of dilemmas that come with the weather. You can't get a high of 8 with no rain, because things just don't work out like that. Let's just jump right into what's going on here in Vancouver. And actually, this was a very, very crazy week. So if you know Vancouver news, you know the things that we focus on here are housing, homelessness, drugs, and really the weather. And when we say the weather, what we mean is the rain. And there's no real discussion about the weather. It's mostly, is it raining? Is it going to rain for the next week, or is it not raining? What does the weekend look like? But on Tuesday, we almost didn't have to worry about the weather at all. There was a earthquake about 150 miles south of the Alaskan Rim. And so if you don't know much about geography, and you don't know much about the Pacific Northwest and the Pacific Northwest geography, we lie on the Juan de Fuca tectonic plate. And so eventually, inevitably, so inevitable that we are overdue, 50 years, there will be an earthquake. An earthquake will trigger a tsunami, and it will potentially wipe out the Pacific Northwest. So basically, we're just waiting. Basically, people are just waiting on this earthquake to happen and waiting on the tsunami, because the earthquake is inconsequential, but the tsunami is really what people are worried about. And so on Tuesday, there was an earthquake in the Arctic, which would likely have triggered a tsunami, so much that there were alerts sent out around 1:30 a.m. on Tuesday. Alerts from here in Vancouver, on the island, in Vancouver Island, all the way up to the Yukon, all the way up to Alaska, where they were telling people to evacuate and telling people to get to higher ground and to safe places, because they anticipated that the earthquake that hit could have triggered the tsunami. And while the alert, I think, only lasted a few minutes, I think when I say a few minutes, maybe like 30 minutes, it lasted some places as long as 2 hours. People were really nervous about what was going to happen to them had the tsunami hit. And this is something that we've been talking about, not just amongst, you know, me and my friends when you get a little into it, but this is something we talk about at work, like the preparedness of the earthquake and the tsunami, because it is inevitable. Like Vancouver, for millennia, it has been documented that rather regularly, a shift in the tectonic plates happens and a big wave comes and wipes out and people will just restart again. But it hasn't happened basically. I mean, basically Vancouver is like a very, very brand new city. And so it hasn't happened since Vancouver has been built. And so it is due to happen now. And we're not ready. I think there's a study done that talks about how people who live in areas where natural disasters are frequent and rather expected are less ready than people who don't live in those types of places. And it's more of the sense that I'll be okay. Not in the idea that you actually know you'll be okay because you don't really know what the hell is going on, but in the idea that, like, you know, this is out of my control. And that's how I feel. I pretty much feel that earthquake, tsunami is going to hit me. I live near Kitsilano. So if you are listening and you're not familiar with Kitsilano, it's really, it's like really, really close to the beach. And so if the tsunami hits, hopefully I'm far enough up the hill that I won't be affected. But I can't imagine my house being safe. However, these are the types of situations that, you know, mentally sitting on my couch watching Walking Dead has prepared me for. And I think that there's some value in, you know, putting yourself in those situations. Like, I empathize with the actors in Pacific Rim, and I empathize with those types of people in the idea that I feel that that will help me come times. And while that might be irrational, I feel like that better prepares me than lots, especially according to the study talking about how people have taken no precaution. And I think taking some precaution, like maybe watching movies where natural disasters happen so you can see how actors react, is better than not doing anything at all. And it's just interesting to think that these are actual possibilities that people have to think about. If you're listening from someplace where tsunamis aren't a concern, or maybe you're listening to someplace where, you know, other things are concerned, like blizzards or hurricanes or tornadoes, and earthquakes have been popping up in places where they haven't typically been in some time. When I was living in Ohio, I had never experienced an earthquake until a few years after they started fracking in western Pennsylvania. Then tremors and earthquakes started to pop up, you know, in places where they hadn't before. And these were like not even just earthquakes, but sinkholes and mudslides and all types of things. I mean, we saw here a few weeks ago that mudslides have killed people in California. It's these natural disasters are happening, and they seem to be happening more frequent. And with the internet and just the way that news travels so quickly, it's become almost as certain as school shootings, which we'll get into later. But they just seem to be happening with more frequency, and everybody should be prepared. So, like, as a joke, I joke about watching TV as a way to be prepared. But, I mean, we all know that there are actual classes and actual things that you should be prepared on. And at least if you aren't, you should probably find a friend that is, because you're going to want to make sure that you have somebody that knows what they're doing. But moving on to something that felt like the end of the world for some, it's coming to an end. So this past week, there in Parliament, there was a vote on, or in the cabinet, there was a vote on whether or not the Canada Post should stop their community box mail posting service. So a few years ago, in an effort to save money, Canada Post decided that they were going to stop delivering mail to 5 million Canadians' front doors and start programs where they would deliver them to community boxes instead. And this angered a lot of elderly people, a lot of disabled people, and a lot of lazy people, because they felt that they were inconvenienced by, I mean, elderly people and disabled people, I understand it is an inconvenience to have to leave your house to go to a mailbox to retrieve your mail. But for lazy people, it seems as an inconvenience. However, I understand. And I think that it makes I think it makes a lot of sense. However, Cabinet, they agreed to stop the conversion of about 4 million people's mailboxes into community boxes. However, when they ran on the campaign said that they were going to roll back the already established community boxes for 800,000 residents and roll them back into like the typical way that they would normally get the mail, but they have halted on that because it was going to cost $32 million. And that doesn't make any sense. While I understand it doesn't make sense for all of Canadians to have to pay for these people to get their mailboxes back, it also doesn't make sense for these 800,000 Canadians to continue to pay the same amount of their taxes for a service that they are only getting like three quarters of. Because I would say it is an inconvenience that they're not getting their mail to their door. But what difference is that than an apartment? Like, I live in an apartment and I don't get my mail to my door and I don't really complain. So I feel that there are lazy people and there are people who go above and beyond. And I think that maybe this is an opportunity for community engagement and people in the community to step up and really help out people who are disabled and elderly and have a tough time getting their mail. There is a reason why people continue to have kids. And I think that a lot of the reasons why people have kids is so that they can do chores. You know, we made some types of forced labor illegal a long time ago for a good reason. And I guess I don't have a kid yet, but I can't wait. But when I do have one, I can't wait to make that little person do chores, you know, such as clean the bathroom, clean the kitchen, do dishes every day, you know, typical kid things. Because I'm not going to say I felt like I was created to do chores, but I'm not going to say that I wasn't created to do chores, because I did a lot of them. And if you listen, and if your kid on your way to, if your kid on your way to school, because some people listen to the show on the way to work, on the way to school. If you're a kid and you're on your way to school and you're trying to figure out how to get out of doing chores, just half-ass them. Just half-ass them. It's a secret. Because, listen, the first time you don't wash your dishes all the way, your mom probably going to tell you to do them again. Second time, probably get a little more mad. But if you wait a few weeks and you consistently do them bad over time and you just talk about how hard it is for you and how much you can't do it, guess what? You can get out of those dishes. But be careful because they might make you do something worse. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things here going on in BC, particularly here in Vancouver. We talked about the North Shore being reinvigorated and renovated, and we'll get back into telling you a little bit about more details about that.
God. Ugh. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Someone knows where we going. Lord, hope we don't crash, no explosion. Since the jump, we the ones that were chosen. Kinetic, kinetic, black stone, we golden. Black gold, the potion, can't stop the motion. My gun been holding, six shots at hold when you're dead. Like power, give a silver and lead. Got some full throttle, ready for what's ahead. In the belly, get the beast, stop us within my dread. Screaming, fuck the police, like Pac and Craig. All we want is clean water, how we end up dead. Look, I heard it through the pipeline. Paint your doors red. Angel swooping in the nighttime. Might save your life with the right rhyme. Preset my design, straight out my right mind. I don't care if they with it, this is my time. God, body, Pacific, this a lifeline.
God, I love you, Ashe, speaking like the world is mine, Gala Salazin, focus moving like I got no time, what's time anyway, we've been sitting right on point, if you feel me, just relate, it go from God, I love you, Ashe, Ashe, speaking like the world is mine, Gala Salazin, focus moving like I got no time, what's time anyway, I've been sitting right on point.
I've been sitting waiting for a signal, speaking with intention, strengthening my temple, transcending these dimensions, feet cemented, I can't be official if I'm non-committal, everything orchestrated, ain't a thing accidental, my faith unwavering, I'll never be a slave again, I'm claiming mine, no picket sign, I ain't finna wait to win, keep my discipline, increasing my listening, releasing greed, yeah. Peace is sufficient. Said that I was shown that at the wheel when I was 19. Can't hide from destiny. It's ultraviolet beams in my genes. Bet I know everything I need to know if I know me. Over time, I multiply like Yogananda, OG. Holy.
Oh God, I love you. Yeah. Speaking like the world is mine, Gala Salazin. Focus moving like I got no time. What's time anyway? We've been sitting right on point. If you feel me, just relate. It go from God, I love you. Ashe, Ashe. Speaking like the world is mine, Gala Salazin. Focus moving like I got.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And you're back. If you like my voice and you like hip-hop music, we play hip-hop every Tuesday, 8 to 10, on Crimes and Treasons. You can find it on, you can find archived episodes on crimesandtreasons.com. You can go on CITR.ca and find Crimes and Treasons. That's me, Homeboy Jules, Relly Rels, Jamal Steeles, and Horsepower. We have been booming for over 12 years. I haven't been a part of them for over 12 years, but it's just been week after week after week and hit after hit and new artists after new artists. So we play new and old and mid. I don't know if that's the right. Anyways, we play lots of good music. You should tune in. And what you just listened to was Moluba, Peace 2.0. So we started to talk about some of the things that Vancouver City is doing in the new year. So last year, we discussed how there has been some plans that were basically talked about to like revamp Falls Creek. And one of the plans was to make Falls Creek swimmable. So if you took time to look into the news about the plan to make Falls Creek, you would have noticed that the water in Falls Creek is so polluted that it is like four or five times the pollution level that is allowed due to the fact that there's just boats going in and out of Falls Creek. There's moorage. So like there's people who have their boats docked. And while they're not supposed to just release the, you know, basically like the porta potty on the boat, they're not supposed to release it in the dock. That doesn't actually stop people from doing it, because what we have learned is that people are foul and will take shortcuts whenever they can. However, that plan is to go forward. And I saw this article on the CBC just talking about the plan and what they plan on doing with the new, like with the opportunity after they tear down the Georgia Viaduct. So if you don't know, the Georgia Viaduct is a highway that goes through Falls Creek. And I'm not actually sure what the highway does, because it only seems as if it's halfway built. And there's a reason for that. So before we get to what the plan is going to be for the new area, I think it's important to understand the history of the area. And so before I moved to Vancouver, I was very interested in the black population. So you just Google Vancouver black people, and to really try to understand, like, one, where did the black people live? Because black people, you know, do exist here. And like, where did black people live? Where have they historically lived? Like, when did they come here? How are they treated? You know, what is it like? What are the types of things you have to worry about? And there isn't, like, listen, so if you are not a black person in Vancouver and you're interested in, you know, maybe finding out that these are things that people actually do look up before they move places, before they go places, even before they visit places. Like, if you are unsure about how you were treated, listen, I'm sure you've Googled it. Like, if you've never had to Google it, you should ask someone who has and just listen to them, because maybe you might learn something about their experience. So I Googled about Vancouver, and what you learn is that there used to be a neighborhood called Hogan's Alley. And so Hogan's Alley runs right where the Georgia Viaduct used to be. And if you are listening from another city, I guarantee you that there used to be a black neighborhood where your highways used to be. And that also was displaced, and those people were also displaced as well. So in the 70s, they wanted to build a highway through Gastown, Strathcona, Chinatown, Hogan's Alley, and all were blocked except for Hogan's Alley. And so they built the Georgia Viaduct right in the four-block stretch where basically was the center for the black population here in Vancouver. So it was around where the railroads were at, which is where a lot of the black people worked. And there was restaurants, there were nightclubs, there were, you know, just the culture of the community was centered there. And there was a highway driven through it. Not, like I said, not unlikely. This happens in a lot of cities. And so even in the article, they mentioned, because there is a huge, I mean, because there still is a sizable, I wouldn't say sizable, but there still is a black population here in Vancouver who's from Vancouver, who remembers Hogan Alley, who's actually grew up there or have family who were established there. And so as they talk about the revitalization, there's a real question about what are they going to do to commemorate or bring back Hogan's Alley in some manner or form. And so with the new plan, what they plan on doing is they plan on putting in 12,000 units in that area and making about 1,800 of them affordable housing units so people can move back into the area. I really don't have any hopes or I don't really have any faith in any government entity to try to like go back in the past and right wrongs that have been done. I just really expect them to continue to move forward. So it is interesting that they are going to continue to redo Falls Creek. And so if you want to check that out, you can check that out on VancouverSun.com or on CBC website, or I think it's in the Georgia Strait. They're running a lot of stories about it because it is important to Vancouver. And not only is Hogan Alley important, but the removal of the viaduct with the potential for all the extra room that will be created in basically Vancouver's last like waterfront space that hasn't been developed. So it will be interesting to see where they put Cirque du Soleil after they start building those units. And like what type of neighborhood, what type of vibe that's going to have. Because if it's anything like Olympic Village, where it feels pretty empty because they have all of those units that are unoccupied, I think that they could be creating like another ghost town here in Van. And so moving on to a story. So like the theme is the end of the world. So you have to understand that there are some we're going to put in stories that will remind you that the world is ending. And so here in Vancouver, there has been a sizable shift I've noticed in the types of cooking oils that people use. And it's not, I guess, a shift in the cooking oils people use, but if you've ever been to Vancouver or you live in Vancouver or, you know, you've ever been to Whole Foods, just imagine Whole Foods is like Vancouver is like Whole Foods except for everyday life, especially where I live at in Kitsilano. People refuse to cook with vegetable oil or olive oil. People cook with coconut oil, which I found out is actually higher in saturated fat. So if you cook with coconut oil, you should be very mindful of that. And there has been a recall on a lot of the coconut products made in Canada and distributed by Greenfield because they can potentially be carrying salmonella. And so if you have any coconut products from them, so frozen or shredded, you should be careful because they could potentially get you sick. And it is flu season, so if you get the flu and salmonella, it could be your last one. So people need to be careful. And I think that in Vancouver, that's especially, you need to be especially careful because I think it's only a matter of time until we get the raw water and the raw fruits, like people stop washing their fruit. Because we have this idea that if something is organic and something is raw, then it's better for you. And sometimes that is just not true. When we get back, we're going to go into some news that is taking place down south. And it's a pretty heavy topic. So stay tuned.
If you had the chance to go far, you will. If you had the chance to go far, you will. If it was it's up to you, I leave it up to me. Close your eyes, you'll see. I know you wanna try hard, so jump up back in line, boy. You better keep believing, you're the one that they needed. I know you wanna try hard, so jump up back in line, boy. You better keep believing, you're the one that they needed. If you had the chance to go far, you will. If you had the chance to go far, you will. If it was up to you, I'd leave it up to me. Yeah. Close your eyes, you'll see. If you had the chance to go far, you will. If you had the chance to go far, you will. If it was up to you, I'd leave it up to me.
I like this.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's community radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And you're just listening to Kevin George, How I Like This. I like that song. I did actually play that by accident. And sometimes I surprise myself because I come in and I have a lot of new music to play. And I prepare like about 15 to 20 songs. And so I just go through and I don't get to listen to them. I don't get to listen to all of them before I play them on the radio. Like, they get sent to me from my producer. And so we get some good music sometimes, and I like that a lot. It's brand new, even on SoundCloud. It's only got 5,000 views, so if you want to check it out, Kevin George. So we talked about, we're going to get into something a little bit more heavy, and something that has been going on in the news it's been going on in the news for about 4 years, but it's been really highlighted because of the current legal proceedings that were taken, that just finished yesterday. And so if you have been aware, or you are if you're a fan of USA Gymnastics, because those are pretty much the most visible victims in this case, you would have seen over the past few days testimony after testimony after testimony of women talking about the abuse of the team doctor, Larry Nassar. And so basically, I don't want to simplify too much, but Larry Nassar was the team doctor for USA Gymnastics. He was also the team doctor at the University of Michigan State, at Michigan State University. And he deals with athletics, and not just men and women, but he has abused over 175 women over the last 30 years. He was convicted and charged and sentenced to 175 years yesterday. And I just want to play Judge Rosemary Aquilina. I want to play her statement to Larry Nassar, because what I think he did was so beyond foul, and also serves as a reminder that there are some sick people out there. But listen to her reading his sentencing.
It is my privilege on counts 1, 2, 5, 8, 10, and 18, and 24, to sentence you to 40 years. And when I look at my cheat sheet, 40 years, just so you know, and you can count it off your calendar, is 480 months. The tail end, because I need to send a message to the parole board in the event somehow God is gracious, and I know He is, and you survive the 60 years in federal court first, and then you start on my 40 years, you've gone off the page here as to what I'm doing. My page only goes to 100 years. Sir, I'm giving you 175 years, which is 2,100 months. I've just signed your death warrant. I need everyone to be quiet. I still have contempt powers. I told you I'm not nice. I find that you don't get it, that you're a danger. You remain a danger. I'm a judge who believes in life and rehabilitation when rehabilitation is possible. I have many defendants come back here and show me the great things they've done in their lives after probation, after parole. I don't find that's possible with you.
And so what you just listened to was Judge Rosemary Aquilina reading the sentencing to Larry Nassar. So if you just tuned in, what you would know is that Larry Nassar abused and used his status at Michigan State University's team, like athletic doctor and for USA Gymnastics doctor, used his position to abuse and molest girls and women. And there's so many disgusting parts about the story, and I don't think that you have to just rail on it it's easy to demonize and talk about how bad Larry Nassar is, but I think that we lose a lot not discussing about the system that has created and fostered this type of environment. We not only see this when it comes to sports on this level, but sports on lots of levels, particularly sports where you can where there's this type of access and there's this type of pressure being put on these kids, because it's interesting. I've had a friend tell me about some of her experiences, in these type of competitive sports, so with competitive cheerleading and gymnastics, and like dancing, and these places and these sports where it's really expected as the coaches to be very, very hard on girls and women. And it's these types of places where these abuses not only get happened, but get neglected, and nobody tends to listen, because we have built it in hardcore into the sports so much that that these girls just need to endure the abuse so that they can be as good as they want to be. And there's something really sick about that. And not only is it really sick about that, but it's sick that there's so many people who enabled Nassar to continue his abuse over 30 years. Because what we saw yesterday is that the Michigan State president has resigned. I feel like you only resign when when you're guilty, you know, and I would say being guilty of knowing about this abuse and continuing to let it go on. There was a board of trustees meeting at Michigan State where a memo was released, and it talks about how, yeah, while this is an issue, look at the arena that was built. Look how many people are walking through the doors. Look how much utility is providing for other people, and the abuse is really swept under the rug when it looks at the money that was made for all of the people and the publicity that it has brought, you know, the good publicity that sports had brought the university and these types of things and Larry Nassar's role in the athletic program there. And we continue to value athletics and athletic prowess over people's well-being all of the time. And for me, I wonder, one, is it possible to stop? Can it stop? But do people actually want to stop it? Because people are so motivated by the money and this prestige and this cachet that the sports brings to not only to the individual but to the schools. And so people continue to dehumanize the athletes. And so that's what we've basically seen, I think, from this example, is that people have dehumanized the athletes to the point where you can continue to just abuse 175 women. And yeah, I don't think that it should be lost that while at Michigan State, we've seen Larry Nassar, be sentenced to 175 years. It took 175 women over 30 years. I think that is an astronomical number. 175, so many. And so many people have come forward before that have not been believed in respect to him. And so it's just a thing that had been snowballing for forever, and it's just crazy that people let it get to 175. It just seems like a number. It seems unbelievable. But at Penn State a few years ago, we saw I would say the same thing. We saw a culture of dismissal, because that's what it is. It's about a culture of dismissal and understanding that these people's rights don't matter as much as the football does, as much as the gymnastics does, as much as the sports does. And so, what does it take for us to get out of that mindset? And I'm not sure if there's a thing that helps people get out of that mindset. But it's going to be something that I think that we have to look to. And not only do we have to look to it in the idea that Larry Nassar needs to be punished, but also in the idea that the people who allowed this type of behavior, they need to be punished as well. Because that's the only way to prevent these types of things. I think about it with sexual assault and other types of abuse, other types of assault, is that it's just as much like my duty as a man to see, when I see other men or hear about other men talking about these types of things, is that you have to be willing to step up and say something, because if not, you are just allowing these types of things to continue. When we get back, we're going to just quickly touch into a little bit of some, I would say, more light stories, but they're actually kind of sad too. Back with All the Beam Path here on 101.9 CITR Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And last segment, we talked about Larry Nassar. And not only is it important to understand and to rightfully demonize Larry Nassar, but also we need to look into, what is the culture and why do these things continue to happen, and why do we continue to let them happen? like not just in instances, but for years and years and years. And what is the problem with us? And so, like when I say what the problem with us, I don't think it's just leading to assault, because what we have seen is this widening gap of inequality. And if you read the Forbes, you would know that in one day, Jeff Bezos made $2.8 billion on Monday when he opened his Amazon Go opened up. It's the first store in Seattle where basically it's like a 7-Eleven where you can walk in and walk out, and you just take something off the shelf and you walk out, and it basically, through a series of cameras, we talked about this a little earlier in the year, through a series of cameras, can basically sense what you bought, and it eliminates the register. And Jeff Bezos has been interesting because I talked about him like about a month ago, like a little bit before Christmas, where he had just become the first $100 billion man. And right now, a month after he became the first $100 billion man, Jeff Bezos is worth $114 billion. So he made $14 billion in 6 weeks. It is insane to think that someone could make $14 billion in 6 weeks. Like, people have find it difficult to make $1,400 in 6 weeks. There are people out here struggling, and the people who are struggling are in denial. So we talked a little bit earlier about people who are in denial of natural disasters and what they can do to combat them. And the feeling is that I'll be okay because they really have no other option. And listening to NPR this morning, they did a story about these warehouse workers, particularly these workers in New Jersey. If you want to listen to the story, you can read it on NPR, where they talk to people who should be afraid that robots could take their jobs, but they're not. They're just saying, like, listen, what am I going to do? I can't worry about a robot. I just have to continue to go to work and work and work. And what we've seen from Amazon is that Amazon in Ohio, 1 out of 10 workers are on food stamps. And like, that means they don't make enough money to qualify for food stamps. And we've seen in Amazon, there have been places where people have been working so hard that they fall asleep standing up. And so as we look at, we talked about tax reform last week, and we talked about some of the investments that are being made and some of the bonuses and things that are given out. But what we don't like to acknowledge is that a lot of these investments are going to be capital investments into robots and to things like this, where are going to eliminate the need for low skilled labor, such as these warehouses. And just like a natural disaster, like a tsunami, I think that we need to be thinking about like this age of robots as like a technological tsunami that is really going to hurt and displace and put a lot of people out of work. And so it'll be interesting to see what are some of the things that we do as a people to help slow down this rapid need for robots. And once the robots do eventually take people's jobs, what do those people do next? But that's all my time for this week.